Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. We're recording remotely.
We are.
Yes, we are.
Ryan has the plague.
Well, I don't know if I have the COVID yet, but just to play it safe, we are for sure gonna social distance. I've been in contact with somebody with it, so in all likelihood, I probably do have it.
Everybody's feeling okay generally, though.
Yeah. I mean, physically, I'm fine. Emotionally damaged, but with all of the
well, that's outside of COVID. That's not
America right now. Yeah.
But we're gonna fix some of that emotional damage, or at least cover it up by talking about some Pokemon.
Yay!
Which is always great. Yeah, it's the first show of the month for June 2022, so that's Pokemon. And we don't really have, we do have one sort of contemporary topic. There was a new Pokemon trailer, which we'll get into in a minute here, but then we're gonna give, you know, Ryan's got a top 10 for us about Gen 6. We're gonna take a look back at Gen 6 and...
We'll rewind.
Yeah, he's the expert.
Which is Pokemon X and Y. That one came out nearly 10 years ago, so it'll be good to look back on that one. But before we get into all that, Ryan, how's Pokemon Go?
It's going good. It's going very good. I planned ahead a little bit for this one because, like, normally I just kind of ramble about the events. I feel like instead, since we're pretty early in the month, I'll tell you what's going to go down in June.
Okay.
Yeah, so
get hyped.
Yeah. So at the time, I mean, by the time this is actually posted and stuff, it'll probably be in the middle of it. But the big thing is that they're going to be doing the Pokemon Go Fest. It's going to be the 4th and the 5th, which is this coming weekend, 4th and 5th of June. And it'll also have a capping closing event in, I think, August. So typically in the past, I think when they've done these are like $10. This one's $15, but also in the past it would only be over 2 days. This one's 3 days, so it's still essentially $5 a day. If you care about the money associated with it, you know, it's still the same value per day. Also, you don't have to buy it. The only reason why you would want to buy the ticket is if you care about like shiny hunting. Generally, it's pretty much just shiny hunting, and you're going to get a special mythical Pokemon. Which has our, you know, one you should already have if you've played the game. So, but yeah, so on the 4th and the 5th, they're going to be doing, like, rotating hourly blocks of Pokemon. And they'll have different rarity, and if you've got your ticket, they have increased shiny odds. And they'll have different environments. So, it goes from, like, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and since it rotates every hour, you kind of get a new set of Pokemon to play with. So you don't feel like you're kind of stuck doing the same thing over and over again with it. There's going to be new shiny Pokemon introduced. There's going to be new raids that are going around. All sorts of cool stuff. So it'll just be a big event. It'll be a big fun party for people that like Pokemon Go. I'm going to buy the ticket just because I'm big into the shiny hunting. If you're more into it for, like, competitive stuff, like, it's still a great time to play. You're going to get all sorts of cool things going down. You know, you get, for example, like, Shroomish, Numel, Karrablast, Aksu, all of these types are going to have their shiny forms unlocked and available. And at the end of it, if you do the, what should be a fairly simple, like, quest line, storyline thing, you're going to get a Shaymin. And the ability, I think, to convert it to, like, its sky form or something. So, very, very awesome. Like,
yeah.
I love it. This is a great thing to do every time it's come around. So, I think it's well worth checking it out if you do that.
Random question, though. What is the latest gen Shroomish appeared in? I feel like I haven't seen that guy in years.
I'm pretty sure he was in Sword Shield.
Yeah.
Shroomish?
Maybe.
That turns into Breloom?
Yeah. I don't know. I might be wrong about that, but I don't know. I feel like it hasn't been that
actually,
long.
Actually, yeah. I don't recall seeing it. Probably not since the remakes of Oris.
That guy does not get enough love.
You know, I agree. It's a fun one.
So what do you think people are going to complain about the most about this community day?
Oh, God, who knows? They always find a thing to complain. Probably the price. The biggest thing that I've seen people complain about already is just that it costs more than it usually does.
That's an extra day.
Yeah. Oh, did I write it down? I had something in particular that I wanted to bring up about people being mad. Oh, yeah, okay. It's at the end of my list of things to talk about with Pokemon Go.
Okay.
So don't worry, we'll get there. You want to know what's got people seeing red and what's got everybody's... You know, everybody all worked up.
That's exactly right. That's, I love it. I love the controversy.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So every Tuesday is a spotlight hour. So from 6 to 7 p.m. they have a spotlight where the only Pokemon, like 99% of the spawns are going to be one type of Pokemon, and there's usually some kind of benefit to it. So just for the sake of knowing, if you guys were interested, June 7th is going to be Nosepass. June 14th is Mantine. June 21st is Spinarak, and June 28th, I think it's going to be a Pikachu. It's going to be some kind of special event Pikachu that's being circulated on the 4th and the 5th. So, and you'll get different, you know, the different boosts, like different double candy, double experience for evolving. Like, we don't know what the boost is going to be for the Pikachu one, but it'll be cool. So, you know, it's always really fun to go around and do that. No greater shiny odds, but just simply the fact that you see hundreds and hundreds of them. You got a pretty good chance of farming a shiny if you care about that. And all of these do have shiny forms. So that'll be a good thing if you care about that. Raids are going to be kind of a big deal. Right now it's Kyogre. Starting June 8th is Groudon. That one goes through the 21st. And then it's going to be Mewtwo from June 22nd till the end of the month. And Mewtwo is a huge deal. Very, very popular in the competitive scene. And it hasn't shown up in a while. Like, my strongest Pokemon is a Shadow Mewtwo. The thing is an absolute hoss, so worth it if you care about that kind of thing. And I guess the last big thing on the radar is that, like, immediately after this huge event, I think starting the 7th, like the 7th to the 12th, they're going to be doing Adventure Week. And Adventure Week is all about fossil Pokemon and rock Pokemon. Well, rock Pokemon are fossil Pokemon, right? So... You know, you're going to see a lot of those circulating, and since they're giving out two new shiny forms, so it's like Archon, and is it Tortuga? Is that the other one? They're going to be showing up in their shiny forms.
Archeops is the evolved form, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Archon's the first, yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, it's Tortuga and Caracosta.
Yeah, thanks.
Such
yeah,
a good exactly gen, it. But I know so little about it.
They'll also be unveiling... Amoramora or whatever it is, the ice rock one, and then Tyrantum. So those two are now going to start showing up too.
He was Rock Dragon. That's out there. Right?
Yeah, he was Rock Dragon. I used him for a little bit in the first run through I ever did in XY, and I was
he
working.
Kind of drops off.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe, but I also used him the first time I ever did like a player versus player 3-on-3 battle in XY, and it was like shortly after the game came out. So I was playing at work with this guy I worked with at the time, and he threw out a team of like a Charizard, a Pikachu, and a Talonflame. And I had the only one I remember definitely having is Tyrantum, because all three of his were faster than all three of mine. So we got three hits in really quick, and one Rock Slide from my Tyrantum took down his entire team in one shot. It was delightful.
Nice. Yeah. So that kind of covers it. I mean, there's a lot of nitty gritty stuff if you care about it, but yeah, early on in June, it is going to be just a lot of Pokemon Go action. It'll be fun. Oh, and to the big drama, the big thing that's fucking happening that's got everyone losing their mind, is that what they've been doing is every Monday, you get an event box, not a free box, it costs one coin, but you get like 50 coins a day if you're doing it right. So it's essentially free. And in that, at least up till now, has always been a remote raid pass. People love remote raid passes because it means you can do a raid anywhere that you see in the distance, like generally around you. Like, for example, I live... you know, like half a mile from Lake Eola in downtown, and there's a ton of gyms there. And if I see a 5-star raid, I can remote raid pass, so I don't have to actually physically be there. And you know, that's how the game works. It's like you get one a week, and if you want more, you have to buy them from the shop. And what they've decided to do now was stop giving that away as the free gift of the week. And now what they're giving away is super incubator, a three-use super incubator. So it's interesting. Like, I mean, people really want the remote raid passes, and they don't want to pay for them because people like raiding more than they like incubating. But that's also kind of counterintuitive to the purpose of the game. Like, the game is really supposed to get you out and about and going and doing. The idea is, like, you put the Pokemon in the incubators, and then you walk around to hatch them. So from their perspective, the idea is that they want, you know, they want you to kind of do the purpose of the game, right? Walk. Not just sit at your house and do raids all day long. Even though you can do that. You can do that. You can just buy more remote raid passes. No one's stopping you from buying remote raid passes.
How can they stop you?
I mean, that's why you get 50 coins a day. Like, if you're doing it right, you're getting your 50 coins a day. And that means that if you get 50 coins a day, you'll have 350 coins a week. It costs 300 coins to buy a pack of three remote raid passes. So effectively, every other day, you can buy a raid pass. It's nothing for anyone to get up in arms about, but of course, people are threatening to uninstall the game.
Do it. I dare them.
And also, the value, there is an inherent value to getting that super incubator, too. It's not like you're losing something. You're just sort of shifting something. And maybe, like, it's like a 80% of the original value in terms of what the item would cost you in the shop. Yeah, maybe it's, like, slightly different. But it's one day a week. Or it's one day a week you get one remote raid pass. It's just, it's not worth fighting over. And it's just got everyone kind of in a tiz. At least the people that want to go online and talk about it, you know, that want to get all uptight. But for me, it's like, that's totally cool. Like, I love hatching Pokemon. Hatching Pokemon is great. Really, really good way to get a bunch of rare stuff that you don't otherwise see. Right now, eggs are the only way to get Salandit. That's yeah. So then that in and of itself is annoying too, because it's like, if it only comes from the eggs, you're not really seeing them in the wild. That means you gotta hope that the eggs that you get hatch a female Salandit, right? Because that's the only one that evolves.
That's rough.
Mm-hmm.
So that's rough.
Yeah, but what are you gonna do, man? That's the idea of the thing. It's a grind. If it was you know, if this was supposed to be easy, everybody would be level 50, but they're not, because this is an easy game.
Or, you know, or they would just have it where you could import from home instead of just being able to export to home. So just fill up your Pokedex, totally, just importing.
Totally. Let's be real. Like, if you want to just talk about, like, the rewards to a Pokemon player, Pokemon Go is infinitely better than any form of Pokemon ever. Like,
yeah.
You get so much stuff all the time for so little work, you know?
And but when we last recorded, we mentioned that there was going to be the Pokemon Home update to work with BDSP, which had not gone late. It had been announced that it was coming very soon and recorded. But I think by the time we posted, the update went live. So Pokemon Home does now work with BDSP, which I was just kind of amused by, because it was right after I pretty much filled up what I needed for the National Dex from Wes's copy of Diamond. So I got like a couple more things to evolve. I imported a few things from home to fill out the Pokedex, like a Celebi and a Deoxys, which are not available in BDSP. Maybe they'll have an event for those at some point. And also, I moved over my Lodic and then hatched it for a Phoebus, because I'm not going to spend the time to catch a Phoebus in that game. Fuck that. But I ended up using home to transfer over some Pokemon that I still need to do a trade evolution for that I already had. A Porygon 2... Electabuzz to turn into Electivire, and a Gligar to make a Gliscor. But when I used Home to transfer from Diamond to Pearl, the held items disappeared.
Oh.
And I didn't have them in my Pearl version, but I had spares in my Wes's Diamond version, so I just ended up sending them back. So when we're able to get back together again, I might need some help trading.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's really funny.
No, it was just like so weird. Like, oh, hey, just send them over and I'll trade from one version. Like, no, you've lost your items.
Yeah, but there is a cool sense of accomplishment, right? Mm-hmm. Having, you know, compiled them all.
Yeah, it's real
if
fun.
If anything, you'll have competing living dexes. It'll be like, here's my living dex from this generation. Here's like a totally different one right now.
Game Freak stealing from you.
Yeah, and I do have... all of the Pokedex entries from generations 1 to 4, but this is the first time like I'll have like a section of boxes in home that's the complete living decks rather than like a hodgepodge from different generations. But anything else about Pokemon Go that we need to address?
No, that pretty much covers it.
Cool. So we did get a new trailer, you guys.
We did.
Yeah, we did. Ooh.
For Pokemon, what are we, Generation 9 now? Pokemon yep. Scarlet yeah. and Violet. I guess the most important thing to address right off the bat here is, do you guys say Lechonk or Lechonk?
Lechonk seems a little bit more like trippy. Like Lechonk.
A little bit more like snooty me. European.
It's pronounced Lechonk.
But it looks like it's just the kind of normal pig from the start of the game. I don't think we have any details about a typing yet. We did get a little bit of information, like, I don't think it's like a full Pokedex entry, but a little bit of a description to where, you know, it's supposed to be like this really muscular wild pig. So maybe it becomes a fighting type in later evolutions if it evolves. I think it's
Oh, you're talking about that little black pig that just kind of wanders yeah. out? Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Lechonk, the little pig.
Oh, that's its name. Oh, I thought that was the name of the fire type. What's the fire type's name?
Fuecoco.
Fuecoco. Oh, that's right.
Wait, so that's a pretty great team. If we got Fuecoco and Lechonk.
Oh, God.
So we didn't see like a huge variety of new Pokemon. They didn't really show all that off just yet, but we did see Lechonk. We saw this other trainer who had like an electric type. Looks to be maybe like an early electric type that you get in the game. Not really so much Rotom-y, a little bit more, I don't know, Simian-like, which I guess is pretty cool.
Is it called Pommy? Is that the one?
Maybe. I didn't see a name for that one.
Yep.
Okay, because I know there's like Smoliv or Small Olive. By the way, these are total like meme names for the Pokemon, calling one literally yeah. Chonk, and then Smol Smoliv.
I think me and Wes discussed this. We're pretty sure it's Lechonk.
Oh, Lechonk. Eh, I'd go with Lechonk.
This is supposed to be like what, like Sweden or something, or
Spain.
Spain? Oh, the Spain. I guess Lechonk makes sense. It sounds more French.
That's
pronounce
true.
It like that.
Yeah, maybe if there's a Kalos region variant of Lechonk, it'd be Lechonk.
Yeah.
He's got a beret. You guys...
Well, actually, that is what I heard, is that we've been saying the water starter in its final form. We've been saying it wrong this whole time. From the first gen?
Oh, they released the final forms?
Blastois?
No, I'm talking about the first gen.
Yeah. Oh, okay, my bad.
What do you call it?
Blastois?
Well, I mean, that is a pronunciation. I'm sure that's how the French would call it. It's actually Blastus. It's pronounced okay. Blastus. Yeah, because it's like, like a blast of water and a tortoise. Yeah, you know, we don't call them, you know, turtoise, do we? We call it a tortoise. So it's Blastus, clearly. That's what you do. So just glad that's an errors and omissions. So we'll put this at the end of the episode as part of the corrections.
we did get some new information from a press release or I think it came out in a tweet, but basically it reads that trainers can explore an open world where the various towns and cities have no borders and blend seamlessly into the wilderness. Pokemon can be discovered all over this expansion region, skies, seas, forests, streets, and more. Your outfit will vary depending on whether or not you play Scarlet or Violet, etc. And after release, it will get a link with home. So we might be waiting a little bit, you know, in typical fashion for home connectivity. But it seems to be not strictly tied to a gym progression in order to follow you through the critical path of the game. I mean, I don't think we've even gotten confirmation at all yet that there are actual gyms as we know them.
I mean, we saw like battlefields and stuff, kind of like gym-like-ish in appearance.
Yeah, like stadium type things.
Yeah.
We did also see a lot of, relatively speaking, a lot of the kind of open, like wild area type places where Pokemon are just kind of roaming around.
I like the Pokemart stall thing that they got
the
going
kiosk.
On.
Yeah. That's pretty fun. What do you guys think it looks like to be, when you're talking about like an open world Pokemon game, do you envision something more like Arceus, where things are the way that you're catching Pokemon is just like chucking balls at it? Do you think they'll have you enter like a battle screen before you're trying to capture Pokemon?
I mean, I like it kind of both. Like, if it's like a run-the-mill basic Rattata, so to speak, just chuck a ball. But if it's something that may require a little bit more levels and a little more meat on its bones, so to speak, you got to slip into that battle.
You'll have a scripted fight.
Yeah.
I tend to agree. I think it'd be good, like, if you're just roaming around on the field, especially since it seems like the wild encounters are something that you can just run into. I think it would be good to have just an option to, like, just chuck a ball rather than initiate a fight. And, like, maybe if your first catch attempt fails, you'll have to enter a fight or something like that. But just to kind of expedite the process of trying to catch a bunch of Pokemon.
Arceus had a pretty good formula with that anyways, because they will still, like, get you. Mm. Like, they'll still attack you and force you into a combat scenario on certain points. Like, if you miss the ball or something, or they come up behind you. Jump out of the bush. Like, it's just, you'll go into a fight. So, I mean, if they do a little mix of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this, just from the looks of it, it looks very Sword Shield, though. Looks like it's kind of built on that backbone. I think that they might not try to, maybe like Wes is saying, they might make it so that if it's just like, if you're way overpowered and this thing just ain't worth your time, that maybe they could just sort of...
Oh, like an Earthbound kind of thing.
You know, like if it's just... Yeah, if it may just be easier just to catch it. Like, why would you make somebody, you know, work to, you know, catch a Furret or something, you know, if they're already level 70?
Yeah, no, unless you're... to craft the balls.
unless you're, like, trying to grind out a particular Pokemon. Like, I don't know. I don't know if there's an elegant solution to that. I was thinking, like, if you are leveled up to a certain amount to where you're outclassing the things around you, maybe they give you an option to just chuck a quick Pokeball with like a guaranteed catch. But you're still kind of working through a couple layers of menus there for something that people might not want to engage with. And I don't know if it's like supposed to be open world, do you think it works like a wild area in Sword Shield where there are like tiers of scaling? Like, once you reach to a certain level, Pokemon are gonna kind of reach that level with you, but then they'll stop until you reach another level and they'll tier up again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I feel like it could be this the sort of thing where, you know, the game just kind of has not the, not like walls or obstacles, but just like the things are just too strong. There's just either you're gonna have the power level to catch up or something like that.
I mean,
I don't really know what they're going to do to keep
just like Sword and Shield. Like, did Sword and Shield have... Well, I guess Sword and Shield did have a couple of borders, but it probably would be a Sword and Shield-like where there aren't any borders. You can go wherever you want. But yeah, like Ryan says, it's just going to be a level thing. So there's still probably going to be a set path that they want you to go. But you're free to roam and do whatever you like.
Maybe. And maybe it'll... I think the sort of implication is that there's not going to be a linear critical path, like you have to go to this town and then this town, kind of like map you around that way. It's kind of go to whichever town you feel like. And maybe they'll use like a tiered scaling along with that. Like, if there are gyms, you can take any gym you want in any order, but like you're a challenger with zero badges so far, so it's going to present you with this team of Pokemon as an opponent. And then once you beat that gym, the Pokemon out in the open area will level up, so to speak. And then once you take on a second gym, it'll do it again. And so the gyms sort of scale with you. Again, if there are gyms.
Yeah, that would be interesting. But then essentially, each of those gyms, say there's 8 gyms, you can do them in whatever order. That's essentially each gym has like 7 different teams, so to speak.
Yeah, there's variations on that gym depending on where you are when you take them on.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they would program 7 different teams in for the gym based on what order you're doing this in.
Seems like a task.
It's something they could do, but I don't think they're gonna.
Well, it could be more like the trials from Sun and Moon as well. You could just have trials that, you know, you have to accomplish to get certain things. I mean, the game still has its HMs and stuff like that. So, I mean, it could be free world to an extent. Like, you could walk around and at the surface floor of everything, but if you want to get to the top of where things are, maybe you need to have accomplished certain things. You know, I don't think they showed us anything about flying in the game. I'm assuming there's going to be flying. Probably need to get around and ride on some Pokemon at some point. So,
as long as we're not gliding.
Well, I think that there is going to be, of course, some sort of a way to traverse the world quickly. And my theory is that the legendaries that they showed at the end will have something to do with how you're traversing the world, because they did have certain physical features that are evocative of vehicles. The purple one had like turbines, and then the orange one had like wheels and shit in its chest. So I'm thinking, like, once you get that legendary, it has like some sort of ride transformation that you'll be transported around on.
That's funny.
I hope there's still gyms. I like gyms. I like having some kind of structure.
Yeah, and it's a good way of like judging your progress, like how far you are in the game.
Yeah, I don't want a Pokemon game without gyms, so to speak. I mean, I like Arceus fine, but
well, again, gyms are or trials, like Sun and Moon. Yeah. Got away with doing trials.
I didn't really like the trials. They just felt very go to this area, do something stupid, and then fight this one strong Pokemon. And then fight this one.
You described every game ever. Go to the place and do something stupid.
Yeah, I mean, you got me on that one.
But you know, I don't disagree with you what you're saying. Like, trials were kind of just like light gyms. Like, you go into an area. Sometimes you have a couple fights before, and then you have your big fight.
Let's not call them light gyms either. Have you guys actually like beaten Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon?
No, I've never played Ultra.
That is easily the hard, like, I mean, easily the hardest, weird way to phrase that, but it is the hardest boss mode of Pokemon of the mainline games, for sure, by far. Those things are tough, really, really tough. If you've ever wondered, if you ever wanted, like, these gym leaders are kind of pushovers, try Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon.
All I'm saying is that when you have a trial, when you have like your totem Pokemon you're trying to take down, it'll call in help, so it's not like it's purely a one-on-one. There are situations where it's a two-on-one, which is a challenging twist on a gym fight. It's your progress is gated off until you finish this fight, which is essentially what gyms had been through every generation previous. Like, it's a twist on a gym formula. But it is still like this fight is gating your progress.
Yeah. Again, and
it was a good little experiment.
Not trying to be too contradictory. Really, the HMs are the things that hold you back. And
those as well.
Sure, sometimes the gym leaders say you can't use this HM in outside of battle until you've beaten them. But oftentimes it's just a matter of like freaking getting waterfall, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah. And until you get
dive.
To. Until you get to Generation 5, those HMs are ways of funneling you to the area they want you to be, at least through a good portion of the game. And then what after you get to Generation 5 and onwards, it's less of a required thing and more of like, hey, there are other places you can go if you use these HMs.
And that's kind of how I like it, yeah. But again, just gives you
an
excuse to kind of traverse the path again, see what else might have been.
And it kind of like leaves that marker in your head, like, oh, okay, if I come back to this area once I have strength, I'll be able to move this boulder and see what's back there.
Yeah, and then you're like, oh, great, I'm max revive.
Or, you know, to go back to, like, I always go back to Generation 5. In Generation 5, like, right, like, at the beginning of the game, there's a body of water that you can't, you know, go across until, like, you like 50% of the way through the game, you finally get surf, you can go back there, and then like there's this whole extra area. There's like three or four routes, and one of them will give you an egg. Like, hey, what's this egg? It's a Larvesta, which is great. Oh. Yeah, really fucking great.
So what start are you guys going to do?
Fuecoco.
I'm probably going to go Sprigatito. I like the grass types.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Trump duck. I see what's happening with this thing.
Oh, he's got a great head of hair.
It could be more like Pikachu.
It's not his, but, you know.
That we know of.
Which, by the way, hair on a duck also is just very disturbing to me.
I don't know a lot of birds that have hair.
Yeah.
This is, yeah. I can, I'm already really disappointed by that one. Like, Sprigatito, Fuecoco, I get it. They're all right. I mean, Fuecoco looks kind of dumb, too. Not amazing, but it's fine. I want to see where it's going. Quaxly, I really hope they figure something out with this guy.
Oh, that's his name. It's Quaxly.
Mm. Yeah.
I feel like that's significantly less creative than the other two.
I will not stand for your slandering of Quaxly. It's a duck that has hair. And, you know, I think I'm making a total 180 here. I fully support this bird with hair because no birds have hair. And most notably, the most American bird of all, the bald eagle, we make fun of for not having hair. I don't know why it's more pissed at us because, like, hey, you're calling me bald. None of these birds have hair. So I'm still taking Fuecoco, I guess, is where I'm going with this.
I mean, I think it is interesting to bring up that Quaxly, by its name, I guess, is supposed to reference Don Quixote, right? Because it's like quick.
Yeah, they sound exactly the same. Yeah.
But here's the thing about it, because it's Spanish. I mean, I think the guy that wrote it's Spanish.
Cervantes.
But the thing about it is, if birds had an arch nemesis, right, it would be windmills.
Windmills.
You know, and
it's killing all the birds.
Right. Thank you. Exactly.
And the biggest proponent of that crackpot theory, or quackpot theory, if you'll bear with me, is our criminal former president, who also has ridiculous hair. This is a high concept Pokemon.
So it's somewhere in the middle. It's sort of like these merging of two different pop culture things. Mm. It's our failed former president, Donald Trump, and then a book written, 200 years ago or something.
This is just an onion with so many layers. Yeah. It's just Quaxly is the most complicated Pokemon.
I'm gonna guess that Don Quixote was 400 years ago. What do you think, Wes?
I'll go 350.
Okay, I'm looking it up. You guys got anything else about the trailer that we need to talk about? Do we need to talk about the attractive professors?
Oh yeah!
They're both looking really good. One of them looks like the dude from Maroon 5.
It's like, oh yeah,
okay, cool that he's there.
So Don Quixote, get back to this real quick. Published in two parts, one in 1605, one in 1615. Holy shit!
Damn, that's way older than I thought it would have been.
That is an old ass book.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
So yeah, when he's finding windmills, you know, that's like us fighting. I don't know, like a spaceship.
Right.
You know, relative to the technology of the time.
Yeah, that was like super high tech.
Mm-hmm.
Is the attractiveness level of the professors affecting your purchase in the slightest?
I need to look them up again to judge this.
Notably not named after trees, as most professors have been.
Oh, that's disappointing. So the violet professor just looks angry. No, actually, they both look very angry.
They're intense.
They're
serious.
They mean no business here.
They're serious about their studies.
I think it makes up for the gym, or sorry, not the gym leader, but the professor from Arceus. Like, what a weirdo that he's wearing.
I like that guy. He was
cool. He's a big old goober.
He was fun.
He's got that like pencil thin mustache scenario going.
Let's go eat whatever that was. Donuts? What were we eating every day? Donuts?
Probably.
Yeah, no, Sun and Moon had an attractive professor.
Well, she was a professor in training, technically.
You're thinking Sword Shield. You're thinking of Sonya.
I am.
Yeah.
Which one did he say?
Sun and Moon's got like the
was it Sycamore, right?
I forget who it is.
Oh, the wrestler guy.
Yeah,
he's
pretending to be some kind of like superhero or something. I don't really remember.
No, Sycamore was XY. And he was a guy, he had to get a full, luscious head of hair like Wes. Not as long as Wes.
Yes.
But.
No. It's a.
It's tough to live up to, you know?
Yeah.
Not ever.
Yeah, you're right. This Scarlet Legendary does have a big wheel in its chest. I didn't notice that in the trailer.
But yeah, do you guys think that Scarlet Violet here will have some sort of like battle gimmick, or do you think they're just gonna make a solid open Pokemon game?
I think yes. Are we gonna? They'll do something. They'll have some.
They'll have some kind of gimmick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, hey, which maybe, I always like the gimmicks.
Maybe that's what the gyms will be. They'll be just one random fucking mechanic from all these other games. Just the one time.
Yeah, one Dynamax battle.
Enjoy your Z moves or whatever. It's like,
I like the Mega Evolutions. And I like the Z moves. I wasn't a big fan of the Dynamax, but yeah. I like those two gimmicks. They were fun.
Cool. So we got a release date. This game is out November 18th. It's the big Black Friday game that they usually have every year. So yeah, it's I think it's a solid release for that time of year.
Awesome.
Sell a lot of copies, make a lot of money.
I don't know which version I'm gonna get. I was leaning towards Violet.
Yeah, I'm definitely doing Scarlet.
Both are fantastic colors, so yeah, I'll probably go with the Violet one though. I think the Legendary looks a little cooler with like its blue flame jets things.
Oh wait, we haven't even talked about like there's some sort of 4-player co-op mode.
What?
Yeah. So I usually try to pick the less popular version because it gives me like an advantage in wireless trading. But there's some sort of mode. I don't know if it's going to be like the full game. I don't think if we've gotten like confirmation if it's just like maybe some sort of Safari Zone type area, or if you're actually able to call in friends to like play in like the main area of the game with you. But it seems like if you are able to call friends to enter a game and they're able to catch Pokemon within your game, like maybe they're just able to take them with them when they leave. So you might, like, trading might not be the only method to get version exclusives anymore.
Guys, I mean, they could do it so that it's region-based.
Yeah, sure.
Could you imagine that? If you needed to complete the Pokedex, you got to trade with somebody that's, like, in Singapore.
I would hate that.
Well, you know, they got like
that would be so hard.
I don't know if they'll have like a GTS because they seem to have like, reserved that for Pokemon Home. But you know, as long as you have access to Pokemon Home, then you can just like dump something, dump your region exclusives as if it were Pokemon Go into a GTS and say, okay, somebody swap with me.
Yeah.
I hope they put Shroomish in it.
Oh, they I did do some fact checking.
Underappreciated
Shroomish. The last, like, new generation Shroomish was in was XY, so it has been a little while. It skipped Sun Moon.
Oh, it has been.
It skipped Sun Moon. It skipped Sword Shield. I mean, you could, of course, get it in Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl because, the entire National Dex was available in that game.
Yeah. But
if we're not counting remakes, then we're not counting, you know, Omega Ruby, Alpha Sapphire, we're not counting Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl, then the last new generation it was in was XY. But speaking of XY, Ryan, you got to take us away here.
Yeah. So I wasn't really sure what you wanted to bring up about this, but I came up with what I think is 10 crucial things, or the 10 top 10 things about X and Y that I think make this such a rewarding experience. I think of all of us, I'm probably the one that's the highest on this one, on Gen 6.
I enjoyed it. I would love to play it again. I just don't have a working 3DS anymore.
Still gets a big thumbs up from me and Wes. Really good game.
Yeah. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's a good gem.
I don't know. For me personally, it's kind of the one that got me back into Pokemon. I think that like the first three gens I played a bunch. 4 and 5 I kind of dipped off on. I've since, of course, played them a bunch, and I played them on emulators, I think, at the time, but never really got that into them. And then playing 6, it really did. Kind of get me deep back, like way back into the series. But yeah, like you were saying, John, October 2013, they dropped X and Y on us. I think this is a great, great game. I guess we'll go 1 through 10. I feel like we'll eventually hit everything about this. So if it seems weird that I'm bringing this up at number 10, just roll with it. But number 10 for me is the Battle Chateau. I don't know if you guys remember the Battle Chateau or liked it that much.
Yeah.
I didn't really do much But I later found out that it was a great place to like grind some levels. I was like,
that's what I use it the most for, is to grind out some levels and like use the O powers to like get like money and extra experience and shit.
Yep, yeah, the PPS feature that you're talking about, you could boost as many things as you wanted to at any given time, but the big things would be you'd want to boost your experience and you'd want to boost your payouts for these. And you leveled up in the chateau, you would send out writs of combat to everyone. So basically challenges. You'd be like challenging everybody in Kalos to fight you. And depending upon your status in the game, by how many gyms you beat, everyone from gym leaders to the Elite Four will show up at the end and do these sort of small-scale battles with you. Not like full 6-on-6 teams, but they would bring in 3 or 4 Pokemon for you to fight. Really, really fun. I loved it. The whole concept of leveling up in there, not just your Pokemon, but your character itself is fantastic. And I remember, like, if you had, like, a lucky egg on it, three times, like, the third level EXP boost of a Pokemon, and you're taking out a level 70 Audino or whatever it is, you'd get, like, 120,000 experience. And keep in mind that most Pokemon will reach level 100 with 1 million experience. So you just got, like, 10% of an entire Pokemon's level in one fight.
God.
One battle. Like, oh, man. And if you beat like, the Elite Four, and you had Amulet Coin on top of the money payout, you'd be getting, like, 200,000 coins in-game.
Like, Poke Dollars.
Yeah, Poke Dollars. Totally broken game mechanic. It was so much fun. I remember that was one of those things that I always looked forward to whenever I booted up the game, was, like, time to go clean out the chateau. Gonna let everybody know what's up. Really, really fun. So that's my number 10. I guess any other spots that, like, for me, that was, like, a great way to get experience in the game. I don't know if there's any other spots you like to level or anything else you like to do in terms of competitive battling.
You did mention the PSS. I don't know, maybe it'll come up further on your list, but it was really this great refinement on the C gear from Gen 5, where it allowed you to access so many things right from, like, your touchscreen menu, rather than having to go into, like, a Pokemon Center. You can do things like trading and wonder trading and wireless communication, wireless battling, without having to go and talk to someone and enter a room. It just made it so much more convenient to swap Pokemon around and do fights.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, various functions of what that thing does will be future items on my top 10.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fantastic resource to do all kinds of cool things. Number 9 on my list is that they decided to once and for all figure out the whole EXP share thing. They're done with EXP share as a held item. They're not dealing with, like, whether or not it should impact one or all. They're just saying flatly, turn it on, turn it off if you want. It is an item in the game that you can use to level your team up as a whole.
How did they do it in Gen 5?
I think it was still a held item in 5.
Yeah, I believe it was
still really? A held item.
Wow.
So yeah. Wow. Now, this has always been a concern for the game. Like, everyone's complained about it from the beginning, where it's like, you want it a certain way. This was just the most simple and economical solution. There you go, done in one. Just nice. Just a nice quality of life change.
Yeah,
I find it funny that they took that away in Gen 8. You can't turn it
off. I think they nailed it in Gen 6. Like, here's an EXP share. It gives EXP to everything in your party. And I think they even brought forward the scaling experience from Gen 5, where, like, lower level Pokemon will gain more amounts of experience for participating in a higher level battle. So it was so simple to level things up if you're just, like, going for evolving Pokemon to fill out your Pokedex, or if you're just trying to add something lower level onto your team. It was efficient, bringing them up to snuff for your team, and you could switch it off. It was super simple, just, like, go into your items when you're like, no, I don't want to use this right now because I'm getting a bit over leveled and I want to sort of adjust the difficulty for where I am.
Also, as, like, someone that hatches eggs all the time, nothing worse than just, like, forgetting you've got 5 recently hatched eggs in your hand, and then you go take out something for, like, 8,000 experience, and now every single Pokemon in your hand has to now go to level 12 and learn, like, 5 different moves. And then you have to go through the process of not remembering the moves, and it's like, I didn't want to level these guys at all in the first place.
Yeah,
that to me, that's like the you know, the piece of furniture I always stub my toe on is that decision right there. Like, I'm constantly doing that, so very annoying.
Yeah, I'm not sure why it was that that feature, being able to turn it off, goes away. I'm not sure what the downside of having it, being able to toggle it back and forth, is. I really like having an experience share available just for the purpose of being able to switch up the team. Like, if I bench a bunch of Pokemon and then bring in a new team because I want to, like, have a specific team for any, like, given gym challenge, it's just super quick to get them up to snuff. And then if I swap them out again, like, it gives you more freedom with having a team that's not just locked to six. So it's really great that it exists. It's great that it universally shares experience. And it's really great when you're able to turn it off when you want to.
Yeah. I don't know why they ever mixed it up, because they kind of figured it out. Gen 6 is when that just got sorted out. And any further fucking with was unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
On to number 8. Outfit customization. I think this is a huge leap forward for the game. I know this is seemingly... You know, some people probably don't even care about the outfit, but for so many people, it creates this idea of character agency, that you not are just saying, like, I identify as this gender, but, you know, this is my personality, this is who I want to be and who I want to look like in the game. And it wasn't that, like, they just said, here's six different shirts you can get. As I recall, you could change your eye color in this game. You could change all kinds of stuff.
Oh, gosh.
You had hundreds of...
Yeah, because you're staring at your eyes all the time.
I know. Again, it's a really impressive that they went that in-depth with it, that they let you customize your character to that extent, come up with all these cool outfits and really kind of express yourself. And you can see that they haven't looked back since. This is just what they do now. Like, they give you tons and tons of outfits all the time. People really like being able to dress their character up. And even in, like, if you think about it in the older games, you're always kind of a smaller sprite character anyways. So, you know, it would kind of make sense to may have, like, whole outfit overhauls. Like, maybe you could choose from, again, five or six different sprite characters that you could portray yourself as. I mean, that seems like that always could have been an option, but it seems so superfluous that it's just like, all right, why bother? But this one, yeah, you know, looks fantastic.
Yep. Yeah, totally agree. I don't really have too much to add about that one. A really great feature of the game that is definitely carried forward. I think that if I were to offer a constructive criticism to Game Freak, because I know they're listening, maybe don't have these things be so cost prohibitive in the beginning of the game. Because a lot of times at the beginning of the game, and you want to, like, change out your look, that's all your money.
Yep, that's it.
It is kind of shitty that they make it so that it's like, either I could buy a bunch of EV boosting items to deck out my character and maybe a useful incense, or I could buy a hat. I could buy this nice hat.
You know? you always start the game in your bedroom, just like make it to where you can go into your closet and pick out whatever you want.
Yep.
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Your entire wardrobe is just that one outfit. You just got a bunch of hangers in the closet.
All right. So moving on to number 7.
Yep.
This is kind of a catch-all for a number of different things, but I just put graphics overhaul. We're now playing a fully 3D game with 3D models, no more sprite animations, everything is completely rebuilt from the ground up, making this a truly modern game. I think that when they move on from the sprite animation to 3D, it is now the future of the game, and we're not going to see it unless they make another Pokemon Pinball.
Yeah, I remember just playing Gen 5 when they, it was the same sprites, but they were changing between multiple sprites, so it looked like they were moving. I was like, oh my god, this is amazing! Like, it's, look at what we can do now. Like, and then Gen 6 came around.
And I know this can be kind of a thing where some people don't, they think there's a lack of art to it, that they think that it's not, I don't know, not what they thought it should be, or maybe they don't think it looks right, or it's not high def enough, but I think they've constructed, like, Kalos itself, the whole region of Kalos looks fantastic. I like that the characters are, like, kind of proportional to humans. Like, they're actually, like, pretty, you know, they're not like troll dolls, they're not like bobbleheads. They actually kind of look like real people in a real world doing stuff. Yeah, and I think it's some Pokemon you didn't even realize what they looked like until you see a full 3D rendered moving one, like a Miltank, and you're like, oh my god, I didn't know that's what that was going to be. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I do really like my 2D sprites. I like the sort of retro style. But like to your point, what you were saying, like this is really sort of the introduction of the more modern take on Pokemon. So you get the fully rendered 3D environments, you get the 3D models of Pokemon. And you know, like it does take a lot of work to then like go back and start like building 3D models and 3D assets for all of these Pokemon that you'd introduced in previous generations. So, you know, and especially when you start having them like have animations as they're roaming out in some sort of like field or something when you get into more recent Pokemon games. So it takes a lot of effort to make that sort of thing happen. But yeah, I mean, as much as I like my 2D sprites, I don't begrudge Pokemon for moving into a 3D model direction. It's also like when you get like the 3D model games, like the other modern things that happen is you start getting things like your battle gimmicks, your mega evolutions, your Z moves. That stuff didn't happen in like the retro sprite based games.
Yeah, that's a good point. I couldn't imagine there being Dynamax sprites.
That would just, it just takes up the entire screen.
Very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just wouldn't be right. There's something about the lack of scale, I guess.
It takes up the whole screen, but they don't like up-res it. It's just the same thing. They're just stretching pixels.
What you're saying about like a sense of scale, I think is a good point, because even in like Heart Gold, Soul Silver, when you're able to have Pokemon follow you around, you don't really get a sense of the size of these things until you start getting into 3D models, because they actually try to make them proportional to where the characters are. Whereas, you know, you can get like a Gyarados or an Onix following you around in Heart Gold, Soul Silver, but they're not really that much bigger than you are.
Yeah. It actually is kind of funny. One of the things about, not this generation, but in like Sun Moon, it is really wonderful when you're looking side by side at something like Kartana, you know, one of the Ultra Beasts that's literally the, you know, like the size of a ninja star. And then you've got Exeggutor, which is 20 feet tall, you know, and literally they'll be in the same battle together, but they're full represented to scale. It's interesting. It's very, very cool.
Yeah.
Moving on then. You want to move on to item number 6?
Let's go.
Again, this is a subtle one, but think about where I'm putting this. I'm putting this 6. I'm putting this above everything we just talked about. Catching Pokemon grants experience.
Oh, so good.
I think this is a subtle but fundamental shift in not just like, not game mechanics, but in a meta sense, what we do as people playing the game. This is a huge moment because it means catching a Pokemon is just as important as defeating it. So it means you now catch Pokemon and you get the same, you don't have to sit there and say like, I only need to catch one of everything to complete the Pokedex, that's it. It's like, well, now there's an incentive to just catch 10 of a thing. Just to see what it is, just to see what you have.
Look for a nature or an ability that you want.
Yeah, to really deep dive on what makes a good Pokemon. And again, it is just nice that you get experience too. It's something that everyone's always wondering, like, well, why didn't you? You know, kind of makes sense that you'd get experience for catching. But super smart, really, really important, and again, plays into a couple things we'll talk about a little later on the list.
Yeah, it makes it less grindy.
Yeah, for sure.
It's wonderful.
Number 5 on my list, EV training. John, like you were talking about with PSS, with the old GTS system, EV training for the first time makes it visible, kind of this mechanic behind the scenes of how you want to build out your Pokemon and make them stronger. You know, because I remember like sometimes I would be leveling up like a Chansey or something in the older generations of the game, and out of nowhere it would suddenly hit one level and it would increase health by like 35. And I'm like, what just happened? And it's because I was fighting a certain kind of Pokemon over and over again that had a plus to HP EVs. All of this stuff that was just sort of, again, buried behind the scenes is now right up there, up front. I mean, and I understand there's a little mini game that you have to do to do it, but personally, I enjoy the mini game. I think the mini game is kind of fun.
Well, they have to have something, though. Like, I could take or leave the minigame, but it can't just be like, oh, go ahead and assign your 252 stats to whatever you want right now. Like, there's got to be something that you got to go through.
And as I recall, once you've maxed it out, I think pretty much if you've done all of the six individual things, I think it took 15 minutes total to invest 255 EV points into a Pokemon. So in theory, maxing it out however you wanted, you know, it's done right then and there. It's like, do you remember how awful it used to be having to go online and be like, okay, where can I find a multiple encounter, or where can I find an area that's going to spawn this thing, which gives me +2 special attack EVs? And you'd have to sit there and fight this thing freaking like 100 times or like 50 times doing the same battle over and over. What a waste, like, what a dumb mechanic that simply putting in a fun little mini game where you're tapping the screen and shooting some things, like, fantastic. Love it. Or you're just like tapping bags, you know, that's all you got to do.
And it was Game Freak sort of recognizing the sort of meta battling game. Once you get past the main like critical path of a narrative of the video game, where you're wanting to like craft a Pokemon specifically for battling other people, and, you know, the sort of intention, as I sort of speculate about it, when you're like thinking about like EVs and IVs, is for when you're just playing the critical path of the game, your Pokemon is going to be different from run to run, and it sort of like creates this this sense of ownership. Like, this is my Charmander. I raised it, and I fought these battles, and it's slightly different from someone else's because I fought I used it in different battles and used different Pokemon in different ways. And like an inherited values come into that as well, because some Pokemon are just hatched better than others. But it creates that sort of like sense, like, this is a special one because this one ended up better than a different one that I made in a previous run through. But then once you get into more modern Pokemon games like this, okay, the intention maybe was to create the sense of ownership over Pokemon in previous generations, but now people have manipulated that for the metagame. And now they've recognized the metagame and the desire to create or craft a Pokemon in a certain way. So, like, okay, well, let's just make it easier then.
Mm-hmm. And to that point with IVs, I don't want to falsely attribute it to this gen. I know that there have been, every generation seems to change the way this thing works. Mm. But the Destiny Knot has gone through so many revisions of its functionality to where now its current state, where I believe it's 5 of the 6 transfer. So if you've got like a max IV Ditto with a Destiny Knot, 5 things on it are going to be perfect. Mm. So, and then coupling that with Pokemons that have moves like Synchronize, being able to change the natures as you want. Yep. Like, it didn't start with Gen 6. There have been a lot of improvements along the way. But at Gen 6 is the first time I personally feel like where it's like, I get to really uniquely craft a Pokemon to be exactly the way I want it, where it's got the right nature, you know, it's got the right ability, a hidden ability even, got good EVs. It's kind of what I want. It's kind of perfectly how I want to build it, at least at that time. Now you look at fucking Sword and Shield and it's incredible. Like, it's amazing. You're just throwing fucking golden bottle caps at things and it's already perfect.
Bottle caps to max out all the IVs. Here's all the vitamins to get EVs. Here's some candies. Now you're at level 100.
Oh, and here's a modest mint. Enjoy. And it's like, okay, this thing is a fucking machine. All right, awesome.
But smartly, like, all that stuff in Sword Shield is when you get like the mints and the bottle caps and all. Like, it's all at the end of the game. So you've already played through the main game by the time you're able to access this stuff. It's like, okay, now we've made it super easy for you to make your competitive Pokemon.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, moving on then, next item, and again we're gonna stick to the PSS and talk about GTS and Wonder Trading. What a wonderful feature there. Like, GTS is nice for a couple of reasons. One, because it allows you to speculate on the, like, Pokemon became stocks for me. I remember that being half of the game. half of the game was just quote-unquote the market, was just the Pokemon market. And what I was putting and leaving out there, what I was going to deposit, what I would be hunting for, going through like legendaries. It's like, okay, I've got like an Entei. can I convert this Entei into a Darkrai? You know, and it's like, not directly, no. But Entei, I bet you I could turn this Entei into a Ho-Oh. And then I could turn that Ho-Oh into a Virizion. And then I could turn the Virizion into a Reshiram.
We got a game going here with this. Did you ever see that episode of The Office where he starts with, like, I don't know, like a paperclip or something, and so like trading his way through their little.
There's a guy that I'm sure that The Office is basing off of a guy that did this in real life, where I think he took a paperclip and turned it into a boat. Like he turned it into like a boat for like the cost of, like $200,000 or something. I don't know. But yeah, there's always this transitive value, and if you can find, you know, what you think is over or undervalued in the market, what will or won't trade. You know, like, I remember my big things is that I had these nasty plot Togepis that I was trading. And a Togepi with nasty plot is exceptionally rare. You don't see them a lot. And they trade for a fuck ton. So I remember straight up just trading those things out for mythicals. Well, not the Togepis, the Togekisses. I would level them up to, like, again, I would roll through the Battle Chateau and get them up to level 60.
Oh god!
But yeah, no. Again, I've clocked more time playing X and Y than any other generation of this game, by far. Like I love it. Oh, but anyway, to get back to base, like GTS is really nice for that reason. Every time you boot up the game, it was just like, well, let's hop on GTS. Did the thing I deposited get traded? Did someone actually take the bait? Did somebody actually give me what I want? Or it's like, well, what if I want to get this other Pokemon? What's it going for right now? What could I get for that?
And then when it takes, you know, like, just a little bit longer to load, you're like, oh, here it comes.
Yep. And lastly, that Wonder Trade feature kind of plays into the catch experience with the ease of breeding. It's like you're taking in all these extra Pokemon, so rather than just dumping them or throwing them out the window, it's like, well, I'll just put them onto Wonder Trade. And, you know, you're not always getting good stuff. I mean, oftentimes you're getting people's first route Caterpies and things like that. But it's fine because, you know, in the long run, people will just trade you random things. Sometimes they'll be like, you know, hacked shiny legendaries and stuff like that. But generally, you're just going to get stuff. You're going to get stuff, and it's probably going to be more useful than the other things that you already had. So loved that feature. Oh, and I remember actually at the time, like during, like the I think it was actually the Pokemon subreddit was doing Wonder Trade days where like every other week, I think it was like Sundays at like 10 a.m. they would say, here's our Wonder Trade theme, and everybody would just pick a theme. So it would be like all poison types or something. So everybody would just breed up a box of 30 really cool poison types. And then, or just take 30 poison types that they had that were cool, give them special names, you know, give them special held items and stuff, and then just trade them out. So,
That's pretty cool.
I remember doing that all the time and loving it. Really, really cool. Moving on, shall we get on to the... We're in the top three. The top three best things about Gen 6. I hope I haven't disappointed with my list so far.
No, I think it's
number
good.
Three. I mean, you guys probably figured this had to make the list. The fairy type.
Yeah.
Right? We get a whole new type in the game.
Bring us some balance.
Yeah. Not only with the idea that it's going to bring in the dragon types, kind of sort of not necessarily like nerf them, but just give them something to worry about because they decided they couldn't fix the ice type. It's just so broken. Why bother? They're like, let's just make a new type. Let's try again. But also it brings in a check, dark and fighting. And I think another nice, really nice boost is that it also makes two very popular defensive types, gives them a purpose on the battlefield in steel and poison. Hmm. I think it all in all maybe didn't need to be so mean to the fighting types. But other than that, like this is a really, really nice adjustment to the game.
Well, I think some of their thinking when it came to like dark and fighting types is like those move types are so pervasive across so many different Pokemon. Like dark and fighting moves, so many like normal types and even like psychic types and all these different types can learn these kinds of moves. So like even just like for defensive purposes, having like another type out there that's going to resist these things, I think was part of the thinking there. But yeah, like. Not only does it give like a dragon something to worry about and something that's immune to dragon types, but even just like the dragon types alone introducing these generations. Like, dragons are usually like super powerful, most of the time pseudo legendary Pokemon, but like Goodra, Noivern, like these are good Pokemon, but they're not like overpowering pseudo legendaries that, you know, something like a Dragonite or a Salamence or a Hydreigon. So like, they introducing the fairy type did bring a good balance to the other different types.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and with it, of course, we get a new Eevee, we get Sylveon, which is I dare say my favorite of all of them.
It's the last new Eevee.
We get to, yeah, and the game always kind of had this glut of normals, of just normal Pokemon, and I think that this gave them not a ton of them, but it gave them a chance to sort of grab five or six of them from the past and sort of reimagine them a little bit, not drastically change them, but just kind of give them a new spin, give them something to do that makes them different from, say, any other normal type that's been littered throughout the generations of the game.
Yeah, because Clefairy becomes just a fairy type, right? It ditches normal, whereas Jigglypuff takes on fairy and remains normal as well. It becomes a dual type. You get Meryl becomes a dual type. Mr. Mime picks up the fairy type. Gardevoir picks up the fairy type.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm leaving anything out.
We were just talking about Azumarill. Did you say Azumarill already?
Yeah, Meryl picks up the fairy type.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Notably, not Milotic, which is weird.
Yeah, he would think Milotic would, but that's fine. Yeah, and I think, of course, this is the last type that they've introduced. So it's been, you know, 9 years since they've introduced a new type, 9 years since we've had a new Eevee. I mean, just a real quick retread back to Scarlet and Violet. Do you think either of those things happen? Do you think we either get a new type or a new Eevee?
I hope. I just want a Steevee. I just give you that steel Eevee. I want
I don't think I'm gonna be a pessimist and say no to both. I don't think either one happens.
No, I don't think so.
Man,
either.
9 years.
But I would love it. I would love it.
I want a bug Eevee. I like my bug types. Every time I watch a YouTuber doing a Nuzlocke where they talk about the bug types, I wanna like punch them through the screen, like, stop talking shit about my bugs.
All right, move on to number two on my list.
Let's do it.
Number two.
This is, I don't know when you guys thought it should be one or two, or if you thought it should even be in the top five, but Megas, Mega Evolutions being introduced to this game. I love it.
Oh yeah, this was the one that
I
did
think
it.
It's the first generation to do this. It's also got by far the most character and thought and depth to it. Of all this, the Z moves and Dynamaxing that we've seen, I don't know what the new mechanic's going to be in Scarlet Violet, but I bet you there's going to be one. But Megas are so much fun. So much fun.
I mean, in comparison to the Z moves and Dynamax, those just seem lazy compared to what they did here.
Yeah, it feels almost like a half-step evolution, you know? Sometimes you get new abilities, even new types. They get stronger, bigger stats. You get, and it's not all the Pokemon get them, so it's only a handful of them, and you can only have one on a team in any given battle. You can only Mega Evolve one at a time. Still, it totally breaks the meta of the game, the meta competitive scene. You know, there's always going to be basically like one, as I recall, it was Kang, for whatever reason, it was Mega Kangaskhan. Mega Kangaskhan teams were totally unstoppable. But, yeah, they're just so much fun to play with. So it's, again, another collectathon, another excuse to go out and collect all the mega things for the various Pokemon. You know, you get two different kinds of Charizards, you know, whether it's, you know, Absol or Gyarados. You know, everything like Aerodactyl gets them. I hope I'm not just naming other ones, because I feel like when they did Aurus, they also created a lot more Megas.
Yeah, I think Aerodactyl came in Aurus. I could be wrong, but I think that's where that
was. Yeah, I'm not sure which ones were all the original 6th-gen Megas, but...
We got, like, your Gen 1 starters, Venusaur, Blastoise, two different Charizards.
Yeah. What is it, Electrike becomes?
Mewtwo.
Yeah, Mewtwo.
Mewtwo had two forms.
Abomasnow got one. fucking Sableye got one. Oh, Sableye, Mega Sableye.
Yeah.
How wonderful.
Sableye became okay. Like, he became usable with the Mega Evolution.
Lucario.
Same with Binette. Lucario. Binette had one.
Yeah.
Oh, Gengar.
Of course, Binette was Horus, but
like it's like you guys are saying, probably the most like well developed, well thought through. Like the first time they're doing something like this, so I'm sure like once they get to Gen 7 and 8, okay, we don't want to do just Mega Evolutions over again, so we're trying to come up with something else. But it's like a once per battle, you pop it on one of your Pokemon that's holding the appropriate item, and it gets like a stat move, like you're saying, like a type change, like Ampharos becomes an electric dragon, which is great. But then, like,
did Aggron becomes pure steel?
Maybe.
Like, how badass is that?
I think so.
Like, it's pervasive. So you can actually withdraw your Mega Pokemon and swap into something else if you deem it necessary, and it stays Mega Evolved until, you know, the battle ends or it faints. So it's not like Dynamax, where you're out there for three turns and you're hoping to do some sweeping at that point. And it's not like a Z move, where it's like a once per battle, you just pop a move that's going to one-hit KO almost anything and move on. Like, there's... when it comes to the metagame, there's probably a bit more strategy when it comes to what Pokemon you're using it on, and if you're trying to set up a sweep or if you're going to let it do some setting up for someone else and withdraw. So you get a bit more flexibility about what you can do with a Mega Evolved, because it's something where you can withdraw from a fight.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I think that it's got a lot more character in depth than the other ones, and it'd be nice to, I don't know when or in what capacity, but it would be nice to see them revisit it. I mean, hell, Pokemon Go does. Pokemon Go has the Megas. And they're probably very happy that that was the one that they went with instead of the stupid Z moves.
So. I wish I could be in the boardroom for, you know, whoever runs Digimon when Pokemon announced Mega Evolutions and XY. Because I'm like, oh, come on! That's our thing! They took our thing.
They took our thing.
Yeah. All right, so number one thing, last item here, that I think, and I think this is, again, the all most right. important thing that Gen 6 did, is the creation of the Pokemon Bank.
Mm.
For the first time, Pokemon become your thing. It's not a games thing. It's not like I need to carry around my DS with this cartridge that has these Pokemon on it. I now have just a place that I can show off all my Pokemon. And nowadays we see it as Pokemon Home, where I can literally use my cell phone to show off my friggin' 5,000 Pokemon or whatever. And it's great to know that I've got Pokemon on there that I've had for 10, 15 years of my life that I've traded up from various generations of the game. And no more obtuse mechanics of, like, trying to port it from a Game Boy Advance to a DS and then, a DS into... you know, something else, or like it's to a 3DS or whatever other game you're playing at the time. Like,
oh,
it's
yeah.
just nice having it all at once.
It's a mess. It's like a marathon of mini game activities in order to like carry Pokemon forward. So to get it like from the GBA cartridges to Gen 4, Diamond Pearl, you had to, you know, of course, like have a Game Boy, the GBA game in the bottom slot of your DS, and you initiate a transfer, you know, once you had beaten the Elite Four in Diamond Pearl, and you could only transfer like six a day, so it was a weeks long process if you wanted to transfer a lot of stuff over. And when you transferred them in, it sent them into like, I think it was called the PAL Park at the time or something, and you had to like go and catch
in
them
in a mini game, right, where you like shoot arrows at.
Oh yeah, that,
so shooting the arrows comes in when you're trying to transfer, I think it was from Gen 4 to Gen 5, so you would then select only six of the Pokemon. You can transfer multiple in a day this time, but you had to go through this mini game where you like play target practice with the Pokemon that you're trying to transfer one to the other, and it's only when you've like hit all the targets, like it's a time thing, so if you fail you have to do it again in order to move these Pokemon forward.
So if you're really bad at your Pokemon,
right,
are stuck
or,
in the
or you're doing this thing for hours, and it wasn't like a particularly hard mini game, but it's still like this weird extra step in order just to move your stuff forward. Once you get past Gen 5 into Gen 6, there is a way to transfer the Pokemon over, but you have to download this extra piece of software on your 3DS called a transfer pack, and that will allow you to take stuff forward from Gen 5 to Gen 6 and then actually get into Pokemon Bank. So once they finally get to Pokemon Bank, they finally get to a point where like, okay, let's have something that's going to last for a couple generations, a place where you can put them. And it was great. It was like, what, $5 for an entire year of the service? Yeah. And it gives you like all the storage, all you ever could really need to carry stuff forward. And of course, that's all compatible with Home now, so you can move it all forward. And hopefully Home is something that lasts for a while because of its compatibility with cell phones and current gen hardware. Hopefully like Home is the model. Home is the software going forward.
Well, it's kind of a hedge. I mean, if you think about it that way, it is essentially platform proof. Pokemon can now do what it needs to do. They obviously are very, very happy with their relationship with Nintendo, but if they ever needed to jump ship for some reason, if N64 2 comes out and Pokemon finds themselves wondering why they're not on, you know, Sony hardware or something, they could always move. They could just go strictly deal with iOS and Android if they felt so inclined, you know? So, again, it's big in a meta sense. In terms of the actual ones and zeros of the game, it doesn't mean shit. But for what it meant to the players and to the lifespan of Pokemon, this just greatly extended it.
It also meant you could manipulate your next run through. So if you're like, well, I can't get these Pokemon until this point in the game, but I really want to use them from the start, you could make, you could breed up a couple eggs, hatch them, dump them in the bank when you start up a new run through, pull them back in, and there you go. You got a team that you wouldn't be able to go through your early game with usually.
Yeah. So there you go, man. That is my 1 through 10 most important things. I'm sure anyone listening to this is probably like, they didn't even talk about the fucking Pokemon in the game. They're like, are we going to talk about the starters? Are we going to talk about shit like that? And no, we're not. Look that up on your own time.
Nah, the starters were kind of forgettable.
Well, there are a bunch of, you know, maybe we've been going on for a while here, so maybe we bank some of that talk for another time. But yeah, like new Pokemon introduced, you get a bunch of new moves introduced. Like, they brought a lot of significant changes. You know, just like most generations will have subtle, significant changes that change, that affect the way that you're playing the game, especially the metagame. And Gen 6 was no exception. So maybe that's something for another time. But yeah, we've been going for a little while. So why don't we close it out here? Next up's going to be the mini show. And we'll talk about
anything and everything.
Like. I got a couple games that are going to be fun to bring up.
Nice.
But yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think I got anything.
You'll have some.
We'll see.
You got this.
Maybe they'll change.
And then we'll do the retro show. Going to be another really good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's on tap for the retro? So I can.
There's like a list of 12 GBA games. I think I sent you guys a list. I'll send it again if you need it. We're not going to talk about all 12. I'll probably pick out, maybe we'll democratically pick out like half of the games because.
Yeah, we can't do all 12, or else we won't have enough time for Ryan's hour long music.
Sure, we got to prioritize.
Actually,
here.
Believe it or not, it's kind of a quiet month for music. We won't have all that much to discuss. There's a few albums I think are interesting, but
only 30 albums.
Yeah, we'll fly through most of them. Wes, you're going to need to listen to John Mayer's "Room for Squares," though.
Yep, definitely. I need a full report.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to John Mayer.
Like I was saying, because in June of 2001, we get the launch of the GBA, so there's a ton of games. But then in July, there's like two games that are even like notable that they exist. So we'll bank some of the June ones and talk about them in July so we can actually give a little bit of detail. We're obviously not going to play all of these. It's just not feasible.
Right. Well, I actually bought one of the cartridges. It hasn't arrived yet. I didn't realize that it's shipping from England.
Oh, okay.
So it should arrive in the next couple of days. But yeah, I actually got one of the games, so hopefully I'll have a chance to play it. If I don't really get enough time to clock in there, I'll lobby that we talk about that one next month. But
cool.
Any rate, yeah, you're right. There are like a dozen games to go over.
Yep. As far as the movies, like Fast and Furious, the original.
Oh my god. Yeah, no, this list of movies is just grotesque. There's many fucking movies and they're not really worth watching.
A Swordfish is on the list. That fucking train wreck of a movie.
Atlantis, Lost Empire.
Uh-huh, the unanimated animated Disney one.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Dr. Dolittle 2. Artificial Intelligence, AI. Crazy Beautiful. Pootie Tang. I already watched two of them. I watched The Fast and the Furious and Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
Oh, nice.
There's so many. There's so many movies, and God, none of them are good.
I think Lara Croft Tomb Raider. Wes, we definitely got to watch that one as well, because that's going to be an interesting movie to compare to what they were doing with. Because we just watched The Mummy Returns, and it's kind of like within the same vein about this sort of action romp, except with fewer children, hopefully.
Yeah.
And Daniel Craig doing a weird accent.
I think the only difference is that one of them gets that it's a joke.
And the game is to figure out which one.
Yeah, it'll be good. And then we'll wrap it all up at the end of the month with the official show. Yeah. That's it. That's the end.
So long.
Bye-bye.